I hope you enjoyed listening to Greg Hunter. What he's telling you is, put your house in order and effectively rig for depth charge, because it's just a matter of time, and it'll be maybe a little bit rough for a while. Maybe it'll be very rough. We'll be fine, because we always are. We have to just look after each other, and we can do the best job of that by looking after ourselves. Put your own oxygen mask on first, and then assist the other person. Okay? Now, I went to the Batman movie. Saw it last night. I had heard that up east, police, SWAT, everybody, all Kevlar'd up to make the people feel better. Well, I couldn't help but notice. I couldn't help but notice that the place where there was the biggest police presence were in places where there is highly restrictive gun control. Highly restrictive. Just like Aurora, Colorado. The theater that I went to has 8 theaters in it. Huge. You can even eat and drink if you want. It's like dinner theater, only it's on a screen. You know how many police I saw there? None. Saw one young man, he's in his mid-20s, security guard. Nobody looked worried, nobody looked paranoid. Know why? Bet you do. We'll be back in just a minute with Rob Dew. And we're going to talk about this, because there's something about this whole thing up there in Aurora, to whose people our hearts and prayers go out, and they do. Something about that just doesn't look right. We'll be back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Perhaps you've seen Rob Dew hosting the InfoWars Nightly News at InfoWars.com, our friend Alex Jones, our friend and ally. And frankly, Rob gave such a compelling report about this situation in unpleasantness in Aurora, Colorado, that I felt compelled to get hold of him and bring him onto the show. So please welcome Rob Dew. How are you?
Hey, John. Great to be with you.
Well, it's good to have you here. I just wanted to run down this thing. You know, it's like this joke book that they put out in Los Angeles some time ago. What they say and what they mean. For example, if it's a business situation and they say, and you're parting ways, listen, it's the national anthem. Well, sad but true. Anyway, the joke is, what they say is, I wish you only the best. What they mean is, I hope you die. Now, according to this document that was sent to me via Mr. Scott in California, who contacted the Department of State, it says, you may use the following on background as a State Department official. The treaty is still being negotiated, so it's too early to discuss anything about its signing. And here it is, from the Department of State, Madam Secretary Clinton's office. The United States seeks to negotiate an arms trade treaty that improves U.S. and global security. By requiring countries to implement national procedures to ensure that international arms transfers are governed by relevant national authorities and to prevent illicit proliferation, we seek a treaty that establishes high export control standards for all countries similar to those of the United States. This is short. There's not much more. The proposed implementation support unit is not an enforcement mechanism, and it will not have any jurisdiction over U.S. domestic or international law. It is a small body that will help treaty members carry out their treaty obligations. We have made clear in both the preparatory committees and current negotiations that we will not accept any treaty that impacts Americans' constitutional rights under the Second Amendment, undermines national sovereignty over arms transfers, or requires changes to current U.S. laws, policies, and practices on conventional arms transfers. The ATT will have no impact on domestic arms transfers or ownership. This is what they say. That's from the Department of State. However, it is interesting that all this fast and furious stuff and the refusal to turn over documents by Attorney General Holder, and then this incident in Colorado where this person has been clad in pretty expensive gear. I'm wondering how he got that. And now a witness says, no, he received a telephone call, which I thought was odd. He left, and then he came back in with all this stuff. So lay it on us, Rob.
Yeah, there is a lot of stuff going on with this incident in Colorado. And, of course, we do feel for the victims. I've been looking at pictures of victims all day, and it is sad. And that is part of the process to get people conditioned to accept things that the United Nations wants to pull over on us, which is basically a program for general and complete disarmament in a peaceful world, which is the rant that you saw on the internet on Monday coming from the Air Force Nightly News.
Yeah.
And so they say, yes, this is not going to impact the Second Amendment, but back in 61, they're talking about something completely different. First, there must be immediate disarmament action. And this is written by the State Department in 61, or at least it was published in 61. And Freedom from War is their title. You notice we haven't gotten much freedom from war since they wrote this.
No, we haven't.
And then you go, you know, all the way to today, to Aurora, Illinois. You got a guy who's on Vicodin, allegedly. He's who knows what else he's on to go in there and do that. He was in a neuroscience program. It's that's very interesting that he was in Colorado studying for his PhD.
And yeah, isn't it interesting, this guy that, well, I didn't mean to cut you off. Finish your thought there, and then I'm going to connect a dot.
Well, yeah, so he was is going in for his PhD. All of a sudden, he drops out in June, and then he orders, well, you know, we estimate to be about $20,000 worth of tactical gear, body armor, guns, ammunition. He's on unemployment, and then he sets off on this massacre in this movie theater, and it was so perfect, he started shooting right as the guys were shooting in the movie theater in the movie. How did he know that was going to happen? That's an interesting thought. But go ahead and finish your point.
Well, I'm just thinking, you got a guy here that was a PhD candidate in neuroscience, and then you got this other guy that was going to use model airplanes with 5 pounds of explosive in it, in each one of them, to attack the Pentagon and the Congress. Mm-hmm. He was just convicted, and he had a degree in physics from Northwestern University. So,
very interesting. Yeah.
I mean, what is the meaning of this?
Well, and that guy was actually set up by the FBI.
Exactly.
With the model airplanes. Now, also, there was these guys in Florida, or not in Florida, in Ohio. These guys in Ohio that were going to blow up a bridge. But it turned out that it was their boss was getting them the explosive. He's the one who brought up the idea. And these guys, they all kind of look dregs of society. And they pretty much agreed to the plan. And then they get busted. You have the Christmas Day bomber in Ohio driving in a truck or in a van with the FBI informant, who's actually driving the van there. And all he had to do was punch in the number. And that was it. And then boom. All these people are FBI informants. It's amazing how many FBI informants are in on all of these things. You got the guy walking with the suicide vest up to Congress. He gets busted by the FBI, but the vest wouldn't have worked. It's always these patsies who can't make bombs that work, and the FBI is suddenly there to take them out. It's very convenient for the FBI. Makes them look really good.
You know, I just saw this thing from Dutch Sintz. DUTCHSINSE. Now, it's on YouTube. There's no way of knowing if the document that the man puts up on the screen is real or not. I mean, anything can be faked, but apparently there's a memo that came and went. It's an unclassified memo that there was an advisory put out by the FBI on the 17th of May that they should be on the alert for an attack in a movie theater.
Right, and we actually covered that on Infowars.com as well. Alex put out a video of that, and it's on the front page, and he just recently put a couple other videos up, and we are convinced at this point that this is a staged provocateur operation. Either the guy's a mind control subject, or he was working with other people, and I think that's all going to come out. There's how did this guy get back into the theater? You know, they said he made a phone call, and there's conflicting reports on that. Some people are saying it wasn't even him that left, but, you know, a man walked out, and then he comes back in.
And what do you reckon the value of that equipment he was wearing came to?
We're thinking about $20,000 with this is including the incendiary stuff in his apartment too. Just looking at where you're going to get all that, the body armor, 6,000 rounds of ammunition. He's got the shotgun, the handgun, the assault rifle. You know, this stuff isn't cheap, and he was on unemployment at the time. He was living in an apartment, so he has expenses there. You know, most people working a full-time job can barely make enough money to feed themselves and enjoy themselves. So where is he getting all this money to buy an arsenal of weapons? You know, that's...
Here's a hypothetical for you.
Sure.
Does it seem to anybody but me that the more outrageous the crime, the more likely it is that the perpetrator will be taken into custody? You know, you get a couple of guys robbing a liquor store, and the cops are just going to roll up and smoke them, more than likely, you know?
Yeah.
But somebody blows up a Ryder truck in front of a federal building, and he gets arrested. And this guy here shoots up a theater full of people. He's wearing all this stuff, and he surrenders, and the police accept his surrender.
Right, he gives up calmly, and then he tells them that his house is booby-trapped. Why would he bother telling him his house is booby-trapped?
I mean, most people want to, you know, go out in the proverbial blaze of glory when they do these things.
Sure.
But this is not the case with this person.
No, without incident, he had guns on him. Why not?
Well, they didn't know if he had a chest pack on him.
Yeah. And the cops took him down, and there you go. And then now he's in prison. He's got his orange hair. He's looking crazy. He's spitting on guards. He's spitting around. People are saying he's still acting like he's in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the pictures of this guy with the red hair, and it looks like a deranged somebody who's definitely on some sort of psychotropic. I mean, you could see it in the eyes. There's not much there. It's, you know, you can tell when people have that sense of life in them, and this guy doesn't seem to have it at all.
He does have that blank stare, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very disturbing. And this, you know, 5 days away, we have a UN treaty that's being negotiated, a small arms treaty, which of course is not going to affect the Second Amendment until, of course, there's a shooting. Then what do we have to do? Well, now we have to ratchet it up a little bit more. We have to, you know, they're making a big deal of this guy was buying ammunition over the internet. Is what a lot of people do. A lot of people buy their ammunition over the internet. And so I can see them setting up stuff. In fact, we came out with an article the morning of the night after this incident that was talking about this is going to be used to attack the Second Amendment. And already you got Bloomberg coming out talking about it. You've got the police commissioner of New York, which you never hear from a police commissioner. You usually hear from the chief of police, and all of a sudden it's the police commissioner from New York, a la Batman, saying we're going to stop the Joker. And it just gets crazier and crazier, and people are going to buy it. And it's really sad. Hopefully the people listening out there aren't buying it right now, and hopefully they're digging for clues as well, because that's how we have to do it. We can't depend on the mainstream media to give us the true story and give us the real story.
No, we can't, and it's unfortunate, but it's true. It's I've tried to I listened to as much of it as I could bear today, but it was all, well, you know, I just thank my lucky stars that this happened. I mean, so there was nobody in there that had anything that could. I just can't. As I said a while ago, I can't help but notice that where you have armed citizens, you have less crime, and certainly in this part of the world, there's somebody there who's competent to at least, you know, at least engage him. You know, so he's got body armor on. Well, aim higher.
Exactly.
You know and practice.
You don't get that in places where people are disarmed. In Chicago, there's lots of killings and murders going on right now, and it's because they have draconian gun laws. And New York is the same way. And
that's where all 45 theaters were manned by police.
Right. And that's a big show of force, and they're making a big deal out of that the police are here to protect you. Police are here to protect you. But they're never there when the incident happens to protect people.
Yeah, what's that expression? When seconds count?
Police are minutes away.
That's it.
That's it. And that's what they are. They're minutes away. They showed up about 10 minutes after the shooting started.
I don't know if you want to talk about Eric Holder's little Fast and Furious thing, but, you know, Mexico's president, have you heard about this one? I'm sure you have. He's repeatedly called on Washington to tighten gun controls, stop weapons from flowing from the U.S. in the hands of the cartels. Because of the Aurora, Colorado tragedy, the American Congress must review its mistaken legislation on guns. It's doing damage to us all. Now, this guy who leaves office at the end of November has presided over fighting between the cartels, and 55,000 people have been killed since 07.
Yeah, it's like a little Vietnam down there.
Well, he seems an unlikely candidate to be lecturing us on what we should do with firearms use.
Yeah, and let's talk about Eric Holder. Here's a man who went on TV and said, this is a few years ago, that we need to brainwash the public into fearing guns. We need to hit it every day on TV, something bad about guns. He's been going after guns for a long time. And he's just improved on the project that was started, the gun tracking project that was started by Bush. And you know, he doesn't want to put out the documents. He wants to hide them. And now there's not going to be any talk of those documents. There's going to be talk of, we have gun violence in this country and we need to do something about it. And you're going to see a lot more propaganda on the TV stations and on these fake talk shows, these mouthpiece talk shows, where they're going to be saying, we got to do something about this. We really got to think about our gun policy. And they're thinking about is just ratcheting it up and taking more guns away from people. And it's been done in this country before. We have gone in to places and confiscated guns from American citizens who were law-abiding, who weren't doing anything but protecting their homes. We've done it before, and it can happen again. And I can gladly talk about that for, you know, hours, because that is, if we don't stop them with the Second Amendment, then all the other amendments don't mean anything. The Second Amendment gives teeth to everything else.
It really does, doesn't it? The right to protect your property and your life, most importantly.
Yep. And it lets you protect your free speech. It allows you to stand there with your free speech because you have your packing on the side. I guess that's a blunt way of putting it.
And, well, people tend to be a lot more, you know, people tend to exercise a little courtesy when they're dealing with people who may be armed. I mean, I've said it before, it's a little bit different when you think you're going to perpetrate a crime, but it turns out really that you may be the victim of your own crime. So, well, take it anywhere you like, man. This looks like a false flag operation for a number of reasons.
I think it's going to come out. There's going to be some investigation into who he was working with in his neuroscience program. What was he working on there? What kind of experiments was he working on?
Did anybody fund it?
Who was he working with? Who was funding it? That's going to be interesting when all that comes out. But it's funny, on the UN website, it says the problem for the UN is that we have guns often fueled by irresponsible arms trades, which brings up Fast and Furious. Very irresponsible for our government to ship guns down to Mexico under the pretext of attacking the Second Amendment. I agree, that's very irresponsible. And I think
so too. Look, nobody's trying to sell the NRA memberships here. We're really not. Just kind of discussing the way things look. When you have something like this happen that takes national attention, and then municipalities and government officials begin reacting, and then you wonder, now wait a minute, this doesn't look like just a someone calling out the name of their deity or somebody yelling, Bell County did this to me, and then shooting up a Luby's, which happened in Central Texas 20 years ago or so. I mean, these things do occur, but there are strange things afoot. When you talk about financial collapse, well, there's hardly anybody alive now, bless them, who remembers what it was like to go through a Great Depression, soup lines and tent camps and all of that stuff. It's like, oh, well, we got facilities for that. I think they call them FEMA camps. We'll talk about those too. We'll talk about everything. We'll get ourselves good and depressed. We'll make ourselves so scared that we are never scared of anything ever again. And it's not even Halloween. What a treat. Saturday night, Coast to Coast AM. We'll be back with Rob Dew. Say, does anybody happen to know, Rob, if there was a sign posted outside the theater that said that people with pistols and permits to go with them couldn't carry them anyway?
You know, I don't know about that. I do know that there was a sailor who was killed, and he was probably trained in the use of firearms, and had he been packing, maybe he could have saved his life or the life of other people.
You know, you know, there's this multiplier when you get a message from somebody, you know, you figure there are X number of other people who would have sent an email but just didn't get around to it. But would you mind just clarifying how this is not to sell NRA memberships?
Well, I'm not an NRA member, so and I have no vested interest in selling NRA memberships. I think people should exercise their Second Amendment. I exercise mine regularly, and I think it's important to know how to shoot. And know how to load, and know how to do it on the run, and know how to do it under pressure, not just in the comfort and safety at your firing range. You should be practicing all the time because you don't know when something like this is going to happen. I mean, who knew? These people, that some of these victims, they were tweeting, this is the best night of my life, it's my birthday, and, you know, a nut job on psychotropic drugs and most likely involved in a government plot is opens up on them. No one's expecting that type of thing. And we're going to get the same reaction from our government, which is what they did with Fast and Furious, which is we need more gun control laws.
And yeah, how do you hold an attorney general's feet to the fire? You know, I don't know exactly, but you must be in your mid to late 30s, something like that. So from your perspective, as somebody that's like, you know, you're rolling now, you know, you're in the world and you've been doing stuff for, you know, several years. And so, you know, you're a part of it now. You are neither a kid nor are you an old guy. So do you just see the civil, I mean, have we just become so uncivilized that now it's okay, we had our Warden June Cleaver moment, you know, or did we? And now we're going to have to go back to, you know, guns and knives in the Wild West again.
Well, I still think we can remain civilized, but also we need to hold our politicians' feet to the fire, and especially the ones that they appoint, not the ones that are elected. These appointed officials need more accountability overall. Did you know they were walking grenades in addition to firearms across the U.S.-Mexican border?
Saw a little blurb on that, but didn't get into it. Do tell. How many did they send?
Well, in just one case here, John Baptiste Kingery, a U.S. citizen, is accused of smuggling parts for as many as 2,000 grenades into Mexico for drug cartels, sometimes under the direct watch of U.S. law enforcement.
Now, how do we verify this is true?
Well, how do we verify this is true? That's a good question. This is coming from CBS News, and this is part of in the subpoena for Eric Holder. It's one of the reports in there.
Okay, gotcha.
It's from law enforcement sources, and
so this isn't just something that's circulating around on the net. That's what I'm trying to make clear, because you know, people have a perception that I and your outfit, InfoWars, is like, we just see a conspiracy behind every bush. The problem is, it's beginning to appear that there is a conspiracy behind every bush, or at least every other bush.
Well, and the good thing about the net is it does let these types of, these bits of information, these giblets, as we call them, get out and lets other people analyze them. And then other people can corroborate them or not, you know, and that's kind of where you take that. I mean, I look at the news every day, getting the show ready. And so we're always looking at stuff, vetting it, confirming it, denying it, checking sources. And, you know, and usually it goes back to some government document written. Like the internment resettlement specialist. These are careers and jobs that you can get at the Army, and supervision of confinement and detention operations, external security to facilities, record of prisoners and internees and their programs. So why is the Army putting out jobs like that? How many do they want, and what are they for? Are they for the FEMA camps that people don't want to admit exist in our country right now?
Well, I understand that if you wind up on, what do they call it, non-official government property, you could wind up spending a little time in one of those camps.
There you go.
And there are some people who have done that, and at some point in the near future, I'll try and bring them on the program, you know, if I can.
Mm-hmm.
But so how many of them are there now?
I don't have a direct number of how many there are. I would estimate there's over 100 at this point. There's Japanese internment camps that were used in World War II that in 2006 Bush authorized to refurbish them. These are mostly on the West Coast and in the Western states. There's camps. We uncovered a document. It is FM 3-39.40, Internment and Resettlement Operations. And this just came out. This isn't a document from the 60s. This is from February 2010. And it talks about for military police how to set up and re-educate people. It's a 40-page document.
Mm-hmm.
And you tie that in with the internment specialist, and then also FEMA. Recently, this is in February, they put out a job on their posting service for contractors to be able to set up and basically run different types of disaster-related services at a 72-hour notice. And you could say, well, that could be for Katrina, or that could be for, you know, an earthquake. But, you know, in Katrina, we actually went out and were confiscating guns weeks after the initial hurricane blew through. They had the Army in there, and they went around and confiscated guns from citizens who were protecting their homes.
Well, did anybody explain why that seemed like a good policy?
They never explained why. In fact, we had a caller the day that I put that piece out on the internet. We had a caller the same day on the Alex Jones show who was participating. He was with the 45th Infantry Brigade, and he was participating at night in exercises where they would kick open doors, ask if people need assistance as they were kicking them in, and asking for weapons and taking them. And if people disagreed, they were handled very roughly and taken to a staging area, which is now the police station, and at that time it was another government office building. But they had orders to kill anyone who resisted. And these are Americans on American soil. Last time I checked, New Orleans was still part of America.
So, all right, well, you hear all of these stories. I hear them all. The people who are in the audience, they hear them too. So what's the scenario everybody's agreed on is the most likely one down there at InfoWars? Are we going to have financial collapse first, combined with police state tactics, complete disarmament, then we'll all go to FEMA camps and eat our imported Chinese, you know, some sort of generic meal, a sort of a, just a goo, kind of like, I don't know.
That's interesting. There's several scenarios. It could be a natural disaster that starts it off, or it could be a massive power blackout that hits most of the United States. People are without electricity for several weeks. It could get really hairy, and then they demand that troops come in. When I was in Detroit filming some of the blighted areas there, I was with my partner, and we filmed actually on a doorway, where are the 20,000 troops that you promised? They're basically begging for troops, and that's not even a war zone or any type of, it's just this ongoing decline that's happening. And so people were already begging for troops. And this was 2 years ago that I was in Detroit. And it's only
begging for troops to do what?
To protect them, to save them, to be on the streets. And
really?
I don't think these people know what happens when troops are on the streets. I've been around masses of police and military in Pittsburgh when they were on the streets and deployed to keep people from exercising their First Amendment rights. I've seen it up close, and it's not pretty and it's not nice. And let me tell you, everybody gets caught in that crossfire. I've seen them in neighborhoods blasting people with their sound cannons. Little kids are standing right there. It's not going to be pretty. But I think the financial collapse is going to get us before anything else does. We're on a spiral, and as you, your first guest he had on today was talking about, it doesn't look good. And he's not the only one saying it. You know, if he was the one guy in the wilderness, maybe you could say, well, maybe he doesn't have all his facts. But we've been talking about this for a long time and covering it on InfoWars and in the nightly news, InfoWars nightly news that we run. And it's just, I sort of see it now as we're documenting the decline of the United States, because the mainstream media is going to gloss over it and pretend it doesn't, it's not happening, and watch your television and keep staying asleep. But we're trying to wake people up, get people out of their stupor, to know, to see those signs out there when they happen. They know what to do. And a lot of it is, like you said, we got to start talking to one another, formulating our plans, and getting ready, because if the SH does hit the fan, we got to be ready. And owning guns is part of being ready.
You know, last weekend we had John Zerzan on the program, and he's a self-professed anarchist. And, you know, several people, not many, but you know, several, meaning more than two, send emails saying, you know, he seems like a nice enough guy. Some of them said he seems like a nice enough guy, but, you know, this is sort of an unrealistic viewpoint to take seriously. And then other people said, you know, how can you entertain this person's thoughts and ideas? You know, he's just talking about tearing stuff up and destroying property and being a moron and being violent and all that. The reason, I think it's important to let people hear either self-professed or recognized by others as being authorities in what I'd like to think are experimental doctrines and codes for living. And, you know, you've going back to this Batman movie. Have you seen the movie yet?
I have not.
Well, it's a great piece of filmmaking. And, you know, I did not feel compelled to do anything weird in the theater. And everybody else enjoyed it, too. Everybody was very relaxed. And, you know, it's a huge theater. But it seems to me, after hearing John Zerzan talk about what, I asked him what led him into his head trip of being an anarchist. And he said it really began with a much-loved man within a union shop, and, you know, 15 minutes before his, you know, he was supposed to retire and get his money, they fired him or something. And as I watch this Batman movie, where the chaos is taking over, the anarchy is there, these little tribunals form. Now, of course, the bad guys, quotes around them, right? Mm-hmm. They're perpetrating all of this. But that's what happens in society. I just thought it was a little bit personally poignant to have somebody who was talking about anarchy and going, well, yeah, because as I thought about what he was saying, it occurred to me that, well, I understand why you might feel that everything has to come down because everything is so messed up and so corrupt, but anarchy is ugly. And when you talk about being in the crowd control situation with police, that's just the police oppressing the crowd. But if the crowd is equally armed and they're oppressing each other, now that's some serious ugliness.
Yeah, and that's not where we want to go.
Mm-hmm.
There can be rule of law. There can be respect for private property. And we cannot have corrupt politicians all at the same time. It can work if we really want it. But the key is shining light on these cockroaches. And that's what we try to do every day. And we're going to keep pointing it out. We're going to keep talking about stuff like FEMA camps.
As long as they exist.
As long as they exist. We had,
Has anybody ever said what they're for? Has there ever been just a... I mean, what's the official statement as to justify the existence of these camps?
I think officially what they're there for is if we have some sort of state of emergency, then we have these places where people can go. We've given contracts to Halliburton to set up these areas. And anytime something happens in a certain quadrant, one of the FEMA zones, FEMA regions, we happen to be in FEMA region 6. They're going to have these ready to go.
The thing that makes him seem sinister, though, is all the wire and, you know, I mean, you just hear everything out there. Oh, they're boxcars with restraints in them, and there's this and that, and four caskets to a little box, or four bodies to a box, and all of this. You're just going, Jesus, you know? I mean, what sort of monstrous thing is being plotted, or are we just spinning off into comic book land? You know what I mean? I like to, before I start drinking the Kool-Aid, I want to at least sniff it a little bit, you know what I mean?
Well, I think you have to look at the government documents, and you have to read the very dry language, which isn't going to say, hey, we're going to kill 25 million people. It's going to say, we need to resettle, detainees for a long-term detention, you know, that process. And they'll use terms like that that will kind of hide what they're really talking about. Like what you were talking about at the business meeting. I wish you well.
Right.
They don't wish us well. Their mode is control and preservation of their system. And they're setting that up because they know they've been knowing about this financial crisis for a long time. And they know that continually giving money to banks is not going to solve it. But while they're giving money to the banks and financing these other operations, our wages are going down. Our standard of living is going down. Unemployment's going up. More people on food stamps now. The government's actually out advertising, spending money on advertising campaigns to get people on food stamps.
What is up with that?
It's to get you dependent on the government. And when you're dependent on the government, you will do whatever the government says. Like, take people's firearms. Vote for that. You get enough people in here who don't really understand the American way of life and what we've and our forefathers have fought for and died for, and you will get them voting on things like more gun control. And it happens in the big cities all the time.
So the big deal about gun control is not because, you know, you want to, you know, get in the buff and lie around with it or something. It's because your government cannot oppress you. So when we come back with Rob Dew, we'll discuss, well, what if there was a catastrophe, and what if we did all go into a bunch of camps and so forth? What would that do to the gross domestic product? Would our enemies come after us then? I mean, what would happen? What's the worst thing that could happen? The worst thing that could happen is nothing, because then it'd be really, really boring.